Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So the descent into madness continues even prior to BLM Brandon taking office. The announcement we discussed a bit over the last couple of days that Walmart was pulling half of its stores out of Chicago after nearly two decades. The response from the political class has been moral indignation, shaming the company it tried to shake down before it was allowed entry into Chicago a couple of decades ago. And that continues because not everybody has had their say. Now, the noxious, should have been defrocked Father Michael Flager has had his.
Yeah, Father Flager, he has new demands from Walmart. Want to hear him? Basically, it's simple. He says if Walmart does not negotiate to stay open in the city, then they're going to shut down the Walmart in Evergreen Park. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But right now we're saying Walmart stay here. So we will try to talk with them. If they not and they close up on Sunday, then we'll be over at Evergreen Park to shut that Walmart.
Can you walk me through the logic, please?
Yeah, right. So in response to Walmart shutting down, they're going to shut down one of the remaining Walmarts. Got it.
Okay, here. There's more.
So Walmart, you better listen, you better sit down. Otherwise, understand that this won't be the only store you'll be closing down, because we're not going to keep supporting places that disrespect the community.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And I feel bad. I actually know somebody who shops at the Chatham store and is devastated that they're not going to be open, but closing the Evergreen Park store, I mean, what does that even look like? Because, of course, no reporter did a follow-up. Was when you say you're going to shut down, are you going to just protest in front of there? Are you going to have people boycott it? Because people need goods. People need products. And that's why, you know, if they're not going to the Chatham one, they have to go to the Evergreen Park one or the one on 111th, because that'll be next.
Doug McMillan's the CEO of Walmart. He said of closing stores, if local jurisdictions can't help the chain reduce thefts, prices will be higher and or stores will close. He added he'd like to see local law enforcement take a firmer stance on prosecuting shopliftings and organized crime. It's just policy consistency and clarity so we can make capital investments with some vision. That is a very vanilla way of saying we can't do business in a place that doesn't enforce the rule of law. This just in. And Father Flager, of course, is not interested in enforcing the rule of law either. He goes after the instrumentality of crime when he is forever protesting outside gun stores and filing suits to try to hold gun manufacturers liable for what people do with guns, the illegal acts that people commit with guns in Chicago and elsewhere, but obviously his focus is Chicago. And now he wants to go after, I don't know, the instrumentality that provides, so you know, you can use guns to protect yourself, the instrumentality that provides security. Now he wants to go after the instrumentality that provides food, and that would be big grocery stores that provide staples that people need at lower prices that they can get at the boutique grocery stores. So this, again, is how the political class, and Father Flager is a part of it in Chicago, this is how they serve their constituents. They make life intolerable. They reduce your quality of life, and then they blame the people who say, I don't want to be a part of your community anymore. Those are the bad guys. Walmart was a bad guy. Then it came in and it was a good guy. Now it's a bad guy again. Corporations generally bad guys. We know this from BLM Brandon. They don't pay their fair share in corporate taxes. This is why he's got to. That's why he's walking down the path of increasing, trying to increase taxes on corporations in the city of Chicago, whatever form that takes. The bad guys. We don't learn lessons to, such that we hold ourselves accountable and change our behavior. So we have to find people to blame. That's what Father Flager is excellent at. You know somebody is going to do that when they have a bullhorn in their hand, and that is his weapon of choice to project ignorance. And so here we see it with Walmart as well. We're going to boycott, threaten you after we have supported the institutional power structure that made it has made it unprofitable and generally disagreeable to do business in your community.
And after the Chatham store was destroyed in 2020 after the George Floyd riots, and I mean the shelves were empty, McMillan was talking about, you know, possibly putting products behind glass. If local jurisdictions can't help the chain reduce thefts, prices will be higher and slash, quote, or stores will be closed. So this was, you know, in the last 5 years, they've lost tens of millions of dollars. More so, and it doubled more so in the last 17 years.
You know what a better idea would be? What? And it would never come from a despicable race hustler like Michael Flager. Just a bad human being. And I don't really care to hear from the parishioners of St. Sabina who've been buffaloed by him. And I don't really care to hear people, well, he's sort of for school choice. Bad human being. Again, Flager, the Jackson family, the Daley family, the Burke family, the Stroger family, the teachers' unions, the public sector unions, frankly, most of the trades for most of the time. Think about these institutional interests, C-suites, corporate execs in Chicago. Think about the institutional interests. This is how you have to look at Chicago. You don't look at it geographically. You look at it demographically. You look at it through the lens of institutions. Those individuals who were atop or part of the power structure of institutions, how have they performed over the last 50 years? Is the city better or worse off for the choices they made? Has that been the case for a long time? Right, they could put planters in the middle of streets and beautify the town and have, wonderful architects design beautiful buildings that everybody got paid to build. But, you know, below the surface, what was bubbling? And now it's all out on the streets. But those same parties who were in charge for substantial portions of the last 50 years, if not still in charge in meaningful ways, how have they performed? How has Michael Flager served your interests? Southsiders, I mean, you know, black Southsiders, his stated constituency.
Well, he could have explained to people what was going on, and instead he just infuriated them fear and anger.
Well, that's what he does.
He could
have done this. That's who he is. Jesse Jackson could have not race hustled and shake down corporations for the last 50 years. Sure, he could have, but that's who he is. So let's just talk about what he is rather than expecting or desiring that he's going to do something 180. You know where the opportunity was here with Walmart? It's for the Republican Party. Remember them? No. Nor should you.
What do you speak of? The who?
Yeah, exactly.
What?
The Republican Party. You know, if I was the head of the Republican Party?
What would you do?
All right, here's what we're going to do. Because Walmart is clearly indicating they have a security problem there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get a bunch of people, volunteers, or I don't care, we'll pay them, that are licensed concealed carry holders. And we're going to put a presence at the Walmarts in places like Chatham to send a signal that the citizens will protect your business if the government won't, because we care about lower to middle income black families in places like Chatham and the South Side having the same access to affordable groceries that we have. And so we're going to send a signal. We're going to, you always say we show up when you should show up and you have to be in the community. Okay, here come the honkies to your community to protect your store so that you can have affordable groceries. There's something that could have been done.
Ugh. And then, you know, if shoppers like Barbara Jackson here, they're beside themselves.
Walmart could have did better. Y'all didn't close one but four stores in majority urban neighborhoods.
And that's after listening to Father Flager.
Right, right. Yeah. So they're not racist when they locate there, but they're racist when they leave. Follow the thread here, you know. And by the way, you have to talk to people like that woman and say, explain yourself. Somebody needs to tell her exactly what I just said. So when did they become racist?
I want to tell you also something else the CEO of Walmart said in that Forbes interview about the Chicago stores. This is before, this is in 2020. He added that he'd like to see local law enforcement take a firmer stance on prosecuting shoplifting and organized crime. Quote, it's just policy consistency and clarity so we can make capital investments with some vision.
I just referenced that.
I know. Yes. Well, I'm just saying, but that's...
Mike and Shirley.
Nobody listened.
You're on Chicago's Morning Answer. No, they never listen. They just bitch after the fact. That's what we do. At least that's what the political... That's what these institutional interests and the people atop them do. Mike Shorewood.
Dan and Amy, good morning. I'm hearing this, and the only thing I could think of in many ways, I think there's this underlying sentiment. Too bad. We need a societal repentance. They've reaped what they sow. And, you know, they've celebrated single parenthood, spitting in the face of justice, letting people go that should be put away. We have people that are here that are not supposed to be here. And you know what? Just plain too bad. I've been living under a repressive regime that's occupied the White House that was never elected and has been going ahead and processing theft every day out of my paychecks, out of my house, out of everything I buy in this state of Illinois, Stan.
Thanks for the call, Mike.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about the departure of Walmart's from the city of Chicago, following many other retailers and businesses from all sectors out the door, and the performative outrage from the people whose policies are responsible for the departure, and they're really upset about it, like Father Michael Flager, who is responding to Walmart leaving by threatening to pressure more Walmarts to leave.
Yeah, they're going to have either a boycott or a march in front of Evergreen Park. So he wants them to sit down with him today and made that demand. If you close Sunday, oh, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make things even more less accessible for those people in the black community.
Yeah, okay.
What don't you like my impersonation of Father Flaker?
Doug McMillan, I mean, is gonna see this if it ever gets to his desk. He's like,
yeah, okay,
hilarious.
Next.
Yeah. What he's really gonna say is, they're that dense.
Yeah.
That they're this committed to civilizational suicide. I mean, anybody can follow the logic of this, with perhaps the exception of the Chicago electorate. We've been here before, by the way. And in Morgan Park and Chatham, 4 years ago, 5 years ago now, almost 4.5 years ago, two Target stores in Morgan Park and Chatham closed.
Oh, that's right.
8560 South Cottage Grove in Chatham, 11840 South Marshfield in Morgan Park. They were among six Target stores in the United States scheduled to close in 2019. Well, of course, that has only increased in pace given what happened in the intervening 3 years, particularly the summer of 2020, and what's happening to this day as these big cities disintegrate. Again, this is not just a Chicago problem, but of course it includes Chicago because you could swap out the political leadership and, frankly, religious leadership and business leadership in Chicago for Philadelphia or New York or San Francisco. Be the same thing, and it's getting the same results. The largest whole, I mean, we mentioned this a number of times, but the largest Whole Foods on the planet, 70,000 square feet in Tony, San Francisco, they can't make it make sense to be there.
Yeah, it's not safe for their employees, and they're losing money.
By the way, the other thing that happens, too, when these megastores go away, well, and part of what drives them away, those two Target stores in Morgan Park and Chatham that announced closure in 2018, they were paying a combined $750,000 in annual property taxes. Yeah. 11, at the time, Target owned properties for 11 of its Chicago stores, paying $9.45 million in property taxes per year. The properties were worth, according to the Cook County Assessor, about $174 million. So the effective tax rate, property tax rate Target was paying for the properties they owned in Chicago, this is, again, 5 years ago, almost, 5.5%. So welcome to the party, corporate interests. You're going to have the value of your property watered down methodically, just as happens to residential properties in the state of Illinois, certainly in Chicago metro, because of confiscatory property taxes. That's another thing that makes it unattractive to locate a business and do business in Chicagoland, something else that we sort of forget about. You know, I guess if it was safe, some of these businesses say, it's expensive, but if it's safe, then we can still make money there because they have such, you know, density of population. We've got enough of a customer base, we can make money there. But you combine the high cost of doing business mm-hmm. with it not being safe, and then it's impossible.
Performance and profitability, both. And those were huge stores. They were both around 128,000 square feet. But
Mark,
they couldn't make it.
Mark and Rochelle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I was just trying to, I'm going to try and compress this as much as I can, but I step back and look at the history of a community, like before Walmart, and you look at the small businesses, the families, the connections that we had in our community, and the city council will look at Walmart coming into a community, and they look at the tax base, and we look at the convenience, and we look at all the people won't have to drive as far, and they'll pay less, and so Walmart moves in, and you start to lose the small businesses because they can't compete, but also you start losing those connections between people and family and community. So they all start to rely on Walmart, and they're just kind of disconnected. It's just a big box store with a few employees, you know, but the families that were running small businesses don't live there anymore. They don't contribute to the community anymore. And, yes, your tax base went up, and you got this big, beautiful store, but now when that big, beautiful store has problems and it pulls out, the community that you fell back on is gone. You don't have those small businesses the faces, the families that you grew up with and their kids that you grew up with that ran those businesses are gone. So now everybody's angry, going to blame it on the big box store. I blame it on the people who developed the business community and decided to go the big box route. And they wanted that because they wanted their tax base. But the small businesses that pay taxes, that actually lived, the people that lived in that community, that actually built that closeness of a community, are gone. So we have a different, just a whole different situation than when a small business goes away. Now you've got just a really strange, angry community, and they don't know why and how they got so weak as far as bonds between people.
Yeah.
And I wondered if, you know.
They're devastated.
All right, it's a fair point. Thanks for the call, Mark. I mean, I hear what you're saying, it's a fair part of the conversation, but the overarching point is these businesses would be here because of the density of the population, because of the customer base, except for the climate that's been created by policymakers that makes it, as I said, impossible to make it make sense to do business here.
Right, but people don't understand what I heard when the Target store closed and what I heard when, you know, yesterday's, you know, people, that the store is always crowded. The parking lot was packed, but they're paying workers $15 an hour, and they're getting robbed. So it's not a high performing store, and they're losing profits. And the company has to look at a portfolio. They say they do an evaluation every year, and they have to stop the bleeding.
Tom, Blue Island.
Hey, good morning, Dan and Amy. Dan, I'll try to make this as quick and concise as I can, and Amy, too. You guys, for the people out there that don't understand the city over there, Flagler's Church is on about 78th and Racine. Mm-hmm. We're finishing a job for a lady on technically 84th and Racine, Aberdeen, which is a couple blocks east of Racine. We started Wednesday afternoon, midday, beautiful day out, about 11 o'clock. The guys hear some pops. I was driving away. I just told them to stay in the yard, get their stuff in the yard. I had to drive up to Carpenter because that goes south. Made it about halfway through the block, and there's a poor kid laying on the sidewalk, shirt full of blood. That's where the shooting was, and that kid ended up dying. And yesterday, we were working there, and it's the nicest little old lady you could work for. We did a roof, and we're putting the, you know, the what they call quote unquote security guards, but in actuality, they're de facto prison doors, so she can at least feel somewhat safe in her house. And coming back from like 58th and Racine, and two blocks closed over there, and there was a shootout over there, and another kid got killed. So we're two for two will be, you know, done today. Hopefully we don't go three for three. But where that Walmart is, there's a Lowe's right next to it. And for those that don't know, Lowe's is the same as like a Walmart or a Home Depot or a Menards. And where you said Flagler is going to protest, there's a Menards there and there's a Walmart right next to there. Well, Dan, you go into that Lowe's and it's empty. You go into the Menards on 91st and Western and Evergreen Park, it's jam-packed, and so is the Walmart right next to it. And the reason is the people that live in that neighborhood, if they have the choice of going over to 83rd and the Dan Ryan where that Walmart is, or they have the choice of going to the Walmart on 94th and Western and Evergreen Park, obviously, they're going over there just to get a little whatever extra degree of safety they can get.
Yeah.
And
thanks for the call,
Tom. And stay safe. I was at St. Sabina a few months ago, and when I was driving there, I could not believe how many makeshift memorials there were, you know, with the Mylar balloons and the candle. I mean, it was every street you turned on. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Mike in Lakeview.
Good morning. I find it ironic that the anti-business people, like Flagler and the other goofballs in his circle over there. And by the way, these been irrelevant to everybody except his parents for how many years?
And the Chicago media.
Yeah, well, I find it ironic that the anti-business people are all of a sudden pro-business. And you know, wanting a Walmart. Mm-hmm. Again, as you brought up a number of times, you know, what they did with Walmart when they first came in. The other question I had real quick, I also found it ironic that McDonald's announced that they were closing their offices for the week, New Year evaluations, the week of the election. I'm wondering if McDonald's is going to announce that they're leaving Chicago now that the election's over. That's my comment.
Thanks for the call. Well, it'll be interesting to see what McDonald's does. I mean, they just got down to the old Oprah place.
Yeah.
But, you know, global corporation, they're not looking at tomorrow. They're looking 5 and 10 and 20 years down the road. And where does it make sense for us to be? If we have to take a short-term hit for long-term prosperity, it's worth it. Remember, so many of these companies that located here, they didn't locate here with the idea that they would cut and run at the first sign of trouble. They didn't want to leave. It's disruptive to leave. It's costly to leave. Ken Griffin had no desire to leave. You made it. They made it impossible to make it make sense to be here.
They tried. It's not like they tried. It's not like they don't care about the community or making a profit, but they were losing tens of millions of dollars a year. And Bob, for sometimes those 17 years.
Bob Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Just a little bit off topic, but I wanted to congratulate you on your appearance on Tucker last night. Too bad it only lasted 5 minutes. You could have talked a lot about what's going on right now in the city with all these businesses leaving. Mm-hmm. And here's a new idea for a segment for you. You know, Chucky Toad has his data download. You ought to have a weekly or monthly segment on the businesses that are leaving Chicago, the number of for sale signs, weekly or monthly crime data. And one more thing for you, Amy, are you still going to be able to attend the press conferences now, the ones with Brendan?
Brandon. Thanks for the call, Bob.
Yeah, I will be. And if not, we'll take the matter into certain hands.
So here's what I said on Tucker last night. I mean, just in part, which we've sort of said for some time now, but just to encapsulate it, Chicago, as I said it yesterday and I said it earlier this week, sort of paraphrasing what Victor Davis Hanson said about the country is in the midst of a revolution and most people don't even know it. Chicago is in the midst of a funeral and most people don't even know it. And the autopsy finds many comorbidities, a failure to educate kids, failure to imprison the habitually violent, failure to respect people's investments, and the institution of a case system of benefits and obligations based on identity. In other words, a slow and steady decline in health because of bad habits, if you want to, you know, sort of metamorphize the body politic with an actual human being, a body, personify it.
Yeah, it's bad habits and bad actors.
That's what's happened. And so there was aid and comfort and appeasement provided to these movement Marxists for a long time. And then they took over. As I said, you have to look at Chicago through institutions. I made the point that because Tucker said that Brandon, BLM Brandon, played racial politics. And, you know, that the sort of race hustler, I think he actually called him a racist. And I said he did play racial politics. And the racial group that put Brandon Johnson on the fifth floor, rich, white, leftist women, mm-hmm. the awfuls. And I got a response on Twitter saying, well, you know, where's your, with showing me the wards that the 29 wards Brandon won, and he won Lincoln Park. And so where's your, you know, data to prove this? You're missing the point. You don't respond to a demographic question with geography. Not only is it demography, it's even more parochial and compact than that. Institutions, the teachers union. You think it's dominated by black men and women? No, it's not. You think that teachers union movement, generally speaking, in this country is driven by minorities?
No.
No, it's not. It's driven by white leftist women. You think all those pro-abort organizations that endorsed BLM Brandon moved money his way, that are allied with those public sector unions, is that driven by minorities? No, no.
White, rich women.
Leftist women.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Whose husbands wear pea hats.
If you don't look at it through the institutions, you don't understand what's happening and how the institutional control has moved away from C-suites and trade unions to the public sector unions and the movement Marxists and the institutions they control in philanthropy and the arts. That's what's happened. Matt in Birmingham, Alabama.
I don't think people realize, but Home Depot alone loses $250 million a year in retail theft. When you combine Home Depot, Walmart, Lowe's, and Menards, you're over $1 billion. And it's all this urban decay where it's coming from. The urban stores are stealing from the urban stores, bringing it out to the suburban stores, either trading the goods in without the receipt, or they're putting it up on eBay. And all it's doing is it's driving the business towards e-commerce. And do you really think Amazon is going to start delivering in some of those neighborhoods? I don't think so. So people are going to have to pull out because they can't live. Not only can they not get goods, they just can't exist in those neighborhoods anymore, and they will decay completely.
Thanks, Matt.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. If he is indeed the young man who leaked the classified documents relating to war operations in Russia and Ukraine, is Jack Teixeira, the Massachusetts Air National Guardsman, a hero, a criminal, a combination of the two? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Teixeira, arrested yesterday by the FBI, thanks to the dogged work of the press corps.
I mean, again, the press to the rescue sometimes, yes.
Yeah, the press to the rescue of the national security state.
Oh my gosh.
Against which they're supposed to act as a watchdog. That's interesting. Teixeira, 21-year-old Massachusetts resident, living with his mom, because that's where he was arrested yesterday.
21 years old, yeah.
He is a member of the 102nd Intelligence Wing, located at Joint Base Cape Cod. His rank is about two levels up from newly enlisted.
Yeah, he's a low-ranking National Guardsman.
And specifically, he's a cyber transport systems journeyman. That's his title. That would have him working not in intelligence analysis, but with maintenance of the IT infrastructure. Now, that may be, we don't know exactly yet how he came to access this classified information, but it could be that he had a security clearance. We don't know that. At least we didn't hear that yesterday from Brigadier General Pat Ryder, who's the press secretary for the Pentagon. Didn't know if he had security clearance. Didn't know if it may have something to do with any intelligence operations that the 102nd Intelligence Wing may be involved in. That's how he came upon them. However he came upon them, he posted them on this platform that's used by gamers to communicate, and ultimately didn't stay on that platform. It started to move around the Internet, and this is how, weeks after the classified material was posted, the Pentagon became aware of it and talked about the leak. The Pentagon became aware of it, the newspapers reported on it, and then it became one of the stories this week with John Kirby out there flacking and wagging his finger at the press for reporting any of this material.
Well, they interviewed somebody who read the material, one of the guys in the chat group, one of the gamers. And then, you know, it was inevitable then that they were going to move in and make an arrest.
Yes, more than that, the Amazon Post, Bezos's operation, said they actually had classified material, which is illegal when it's a 21-year-old Massachusetts Air National Guardsman and not illegal when it's the Washington Post.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Tucker Carlson on his program yesterday took this topic up, as you might expect, and he was joined by Glenn Greenwald, independent journalist, formerly founder of The Intercept, before he was bounced from the outlet he founded. And let's start with Greenwald, just his top-line takeaway, and see if, based on what we know to this point, depending on how closely you've been following it, if this comports with your view or not.
The government was lying about this incredibly important war with a nuclear-armed power that we have actual troops deployed on the ground in Ukraine. There's going to be no diplomatic resolution through at least 2023, that Zelensky is planning on using our weapons to strike deep into Russia, which we were told would never happen, risking escalation. He did the job of what journalists claim to do, which is show the public the truth. If you work for the intelligence agencies, you would be furious at this person. You would hate him because he revealed that you just lied. He exposed the truth about what you were doing. What's amazing is the New York Times, the Washington Post, all the people who were at that Pentagon briefing today think the way the CIA and the Pentagon think. They hate this person. It was the New York Times and the Washington Post that did the FBI's work and found the leaker and led the FBI to him. They're demanding that he be punished. They're demanding that the government clamp down and keep things more and more secret. What kind of journalist would ever do that, would want to see a leaker exposed and punished and then demand that the government keep even more secret? But that is what these media corporations are there to do. They love leaks when the CIA and Homeland Security tell them to leak. That's when they disseminate propaganda to the public, like they did during the Trump years when they leaked the transcript between Michael Flynn and Ambassador Kislyak, the most serious kind of leaking crime. The Washington Post did that. Nobody looked for that leaker. Nobody cared. Everybody cheered because it served the interests of the security state. But when it comes to transparency that undermines the agenda of these agencies and that proves to the American people what the truth is, it's amazing that these journalists are on the side of the government and will actually hunt down the leaker and demand that he be punished even more.
Yeah, what about what Glenn Greenwald has to say there? He certainly raises an interesting point, doesn't he? Contents of a conversation between incoming National Security Advisor Michael Flynn when Trump was elected and then Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, that was provided by someone to the Amazon Post David Ignatius, who reported on it. I don't remember the hue and cry. I don't remember the pursuit of the leaker. I don't remember anything other than that being used as part of the basis to launch the Russian collusion witch hunt for the subsequent 3 years. So why was that not a concerning leak as it pertains to national security? No, there were others. There were others. Byron York, but just on this, Byron York points them out. But one more. The only reason we're finding out about it now is because a patriot did leak this to the Washington Post. That's Joe Scarborough at the time about the Kislyak-Flynn conversation.
Oh.
The New Yorker said the leaker or leakers of that conversation were hidden heroes. About 6 months later, Byron York reporting on this, reminding us over the Washington Examiner, someone leaked more highly sensitive material, transcripts of phone calls between Trump and Australian PM at the time, Malcolm Turnbull, and Trump and Mexican president at the time, Enrique Peña Nieto. Again, the leaker sought to embarrass Trump. This time the calls created minor controversies that didn't last long. But the leaking of the calls was another one of the norms broken. The leaking of those calls between two heads of state, because it was Trump, not a big deal. Leakers are hidden heroes. In the summer of 2019, a member of the White House National Security Council, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, another, not a hidden hero, a out public hero.
Oh, yeah. He was celebrated.
He told a person outside the White House about a phone call Trump had with Zelensky. Vindman refused to identify the person he told. And it's then believed that the person took Vindman's leaked information, shaped it into a whistleblower complaint against the president.
And then he got impeached.
Correct.
That was his first impeachment.
No problem there. Legally, Byron New York writes about that, it was an absurd move. There's no structure, no basis in law for whistleblower complaints in the White House. But Democrats in the House were happy to receive the quote-unquote whistleblower information, using it as the starting step in Trump's first impeachment. Right. So to launch the Russian collusion witch hunt, to launch this absurd impeachment, hey, leaked information. No problem.
I mean, look at the Dobbs case. We had an election, the first primaries, that following day that it was leaked. Why do you think that was? Because timing is everything, folks.
Can't find the Dobbs leaker.
Nope, can't find him. Because, what about the grand jury testimony for Trump? Trump knew he was going to get indicted before he was indicted because somebody leaked something.
There's a lot of things that we don't know that we probably could find out, but there's not the motivation because this is about a...
Because the left is in on it, I think.
It's just about state apparatus and the tentacles of that apparatus always moving to serve its interests, not any interest that exists beyond itself, like the interests of the republic. We need to get Trump. Leaking information is fine. We need to protect Biden. Leaking information is not fine. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. Because lest we move past this, what did the leaked information show? What did it indicate? It indicated that the Biden administration and, their comm shop, the D.C. press corps, have been lying to us, willingly lying to us, about the situation in Ukraine. Ukraine, according to the leaked documents, is not winning the war, is not repelling Russia, is not inevitably going to repel Russia. Things are going so well, we need to send tens and hundreds of billion dollars of more to Ukraine. That always seemed a bit curious to me. Now we know why, because things aren't going that well. We talked about Jed Babin, with a former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, about this yesterday. And he made the point. So what do we do now? Now that we know that it's not going so well, what should America do? Cut bait? Double down? Tough call. Now, this is not a full-throated defense of this young man who leaked these documents, because as Babin points out, some of the information in those documents coming to public light can jeopardize the lives of rank-and-file intel operatives, Americans, And we don't want that either. So we don't want a situation where people just take it upon themselves to do sort of a version of vigilante justice within the military and intelligence community. The rule of law is important there as well. But it does demand questions are asked about this administration and the Pentagon. And as Tucker Carlson pointed out, that starts at the Secretary of the Department of Defense, who lied to Congress about the state of play in the war. Here's Tucker on that point.
The second thing we learn from these slides is that despite direct U.S. involvement, Ukraine is in fact losing the war. 7 Ukrainians are being killed for every Russian. Ukrainian air defenses have been utterly degraded. Ukraine is losing. The Biden administration is perfectly aware of this. They're panicked about it, but they have lied about this fact to the public. Just 2 weeks ago, for example, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin told the U.S. Senate that Russian military power is, quote, waning. In other words, Russia is losing the war. That was a lie. He knew it was when he said it, but he repeated it in congressional testimony. That is a crime.
Don't expect Lloyd Austin to be picked up anytime soon. Something else, too, in terms of the coverage of this story that's worth noting. Have you seen how the leaker is being characterized?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's white supremacist.
Gun enthusiast.
Yeah.
Right wing this. Racist rants that. This is to deflect attention. Is this a dangerous man? This is to deflect attention away from the substance of the issue. One is the rule of law, yes, and leaking classified information. But two is that the Biden administration is and the press is conspiring with them to lie to the American people about what is going on in Russia and Ukraine, what we understand to be the truth and what we don't. And this is all dismissed by the John Kirby's and the Pat Ryder's of the world as information that should never be made public. What are you talking about? Oh, so these are the same people that wouldn't have wanted the Nixon secret bombings in Laos and Cambodia during the Vietnam War. You wouldn't have wanted that to come to light. The public had no right to know about that either. That should have never seen the light of day. That's what I'm talking about. There is no consistency here except for pursuit of political goals. These are not trustworthy people. These are not trustworthy institutions. Because the people at the top are not trustworthy. And I'm including, of course, the press corps. And so, what do you do? It's a more complicated question than just saying this was a criminal act and that's the beginning and end of the conversation, as we heard from Brigadier General Pat Ryder, the Pentagon press secretary, yesterday.
We continue to review a variety of factors as it relates to safeguarding classified materials. This includes examining and updating distribution lists, assessing how and where intelligence products are shared, and a variety of other steps. I would say, though, that it is important to understand that we do have stringent guidelines in place for safeguarding classified and sensitive information. This was a deliberate criminal act, a violation of those guidelines. And so, again, I think that's important to understand.
Deliberate criminal act. That's what they want you to focus on. And hey, what steps are you taking to make sure that all this stuff stays secret? That's coming from the press, as Glenn Greenwald was mentioning. Hey, we want to make sure that nobody knows that you're lying and that we're covering your lies. Chris in Evanston, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Thanks, you guys. You're just the greatest. I had the privilege many decades ago of working in a part of the intelligence community, and the office where I worked was called Top Secret Control. And to hear Pat Ryder say that is to hear a complete abdication of responsibility. The idea that some 21-year-old in Cape Cod, who's a Air National Guardsman, apparently an E3, I guess from what Dan said,
yeah,
had his hand on this stuff, is so mind-boggling. I mean, if we live on the planet Earth, where I worked 40 years ago, that would be somewhere in another galaxy. It's wow. Inconceivable, and that reflects the truth of Dan's point that these institutions are so utterly corrupted that nobody is minding the top secret product. And I can tell you the minding of that product when I was there was minute. Very little ever got out. But that gets to Greenwald's point. The press is supposed to be holding up reality against the regime. Whether the regime is Trump or Biden or, you know, Smith, Jones, doesn't matter. You know, Lori Lightfoot. The press now is perceiving itself, starting with the New York Times and going down, as active cheerleaders. Their job is to cheer the right. I mean, the correct, what they consider to be the correct. Their job is to promote the political outcome of, you know, established opinion. And so the country is in desperate need of a reformation, because not only are the electeds corrupt, the bureaucrats who run places like the intelligence community, Lloyd Austin isn't worth the powder it takes to blow him to hell. But I mean, these guys are entirely corrupt. And then you get to the press, and that's supposed to be the bulwark, the final bulwark, courtesy of the First Amendment. And these guys are cheering the abolition or the gutting of the First Amendment via the Aspen Institute. So it's a horrible day, but it's also beautiful down here at the lakefront. Talk to you guys later.
Enjoy the lakefront. Thanks for the call, Chris. Watch out for
the shootings happen.
Yeah, the spraying.
Because it's warm outside. Loins.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We're talking about the Massachusetts Air National Guardsman, 21-year-old Jack Teixeira, who was taken into federal custody yesterday for allegedly leaking classified documents that detail intelligence assessments, among other things.
And according to Fox News, he's been doing it for 6 to 8 months.
Right. And those the documents contain intelligence estimates, among other things, as to how the war in Ukraine is proceeding. And it runs counter to the narrative that we've been getting from the White House and from the D.C. press corps. So how should, and you know, one would have to surmise that Teixeira put these documents up on this on this platform that gamers use to communicate to, I don't know, maybe be cool among his friends, but also to highlight the fact that what is being said at the highest levels of government and repeated in the press corps is not what we actually believe is happening on the ground in Ukraine.
So is he a hero or is he a criminal? He's going to appear in court in a few hours, but he's a low-ranking National Guardsman, 21 years old, arrested at his mom's house. But, of course, the mainstream media. I'm surprised they just didn't come out and call him a Trump supporter. Racist, anti-Semite, you know, anything that they could use to describe him, they did.
So there's the issue of the leaking, the sort of the vigilantism. There's the issue of the lying, if those intelligence of those classified documents and those intelligence estimates are to be believed. And I've seen some people say, well, just because there's an intelligence estimate doesn't mean it's accurate. Well, right. It doesn't mean it's accurate, but it does mean that either the Biden administration has to explain why they are discounting those estimates and they believe, honestly believe, that they're not reflective of the reality on the ground, or why they saw those intelligence estimates, they believe those intelligence estimates, and they including Lloyd Austin and John Kirby, have been saying something very different to the American people. But that would require a press corps to ask those sorts of questions to prod those face people the administration puts out to run interference here. And then the additional issue is the standard. Always try to get to the standard. When is leaking intel, classified information, when's it okay, when's it not okay? It's okay when Vindman does it because it sparks a Trump impeachment. It's okay when somebody leaks a phone call between Flynn and the Russian ambassador to David Ignatius at the Amazon Post because it sparks the Russian collusion witch hunt that went on for 3 years. It's okay when it's in furtherance of getting Trump. It's not okay when it casts the Biden administration in a negative light as liars. When is it okay and when is it not okay? By the way, this is not the only example. Just recently, we have had others. The American First Legal Foundation obtained documents that also give lie to the statement the Biden administration made through White House spokeshuman KJP that they found out about the FBI's raid at Mar-a-Lago by watching the news. Well, the FBI gained access to Trump documents through a White House special access request, so the Biden administration did know and did facilitate the FBI's run-up to the raid.
Why lie about that? I mean, it's so stupid. Oh, wait. Oh, yeah, we watched it on the news. That's how we found out about it. Who, us?
We found out recently in court filings by the Department of Justice that the answer to the question, how many undercover agents, confidential human sources that were being run by the FBI or local law enforcement, Metro Police, how many were there on January 6th? What were they doing? We can't talk about that. DOJ admits that of the 13 Proud Boys involved with J6, 8 or more of them were paid by the FBI to provide the government information about the group.
8 of the 13?
Yeah. The FBI was the majority of Proud Boys. 5 of them are being prosecuted. Also this, another 40 undercover agents were with the Proud Boys on January 6th. This is from Homeland Security Investigations. The vast majority of the group was paid by the government as either W-2 employees or confidential human sources. From the filing, at least 2 enforcement agencies each outnumbered the FBI in terms of running undercover agents, informants, and CHSs, confidential human sources, on Jan 6. First, the D.C. Metro Police had at least 13 undercover plainclothes agents among the Proud Boys and other patriots on Jan 6. Next, there appear to have been some 19 confidential human sources belonging to an agency called Homeland Security Investigations. When added to the 8 FBI confidential human sources now acknowledged by the prosecutors, this means there were at least 40 undercover informants or agents doing surveillance among defendants on January 6th. So this is all coming out, not all, but starting, some of it is starting to come out as these cases are being prosecuted by DOJ, even as you've had Christopher Wray and many others can't comment, ongoing investigation, these are pending criminal cases, can't comment, not going to say. So it's okay to lie either by commission or omission to the American people when it's in furtherance of, as we were talking with Chris Nemeson, when it's in furtherance of the political outcome you want to see happen, and it's not okay when it interferes with the political outcome you would like to see occur. And that's not a country anymore.
312-642-5600 is our turnkey.pro answer line. You could also hit us on our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Chris and Lamont, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning, Amy. Good morning, Dan. I just wanted to tell you, I agree with the previous caller, Chris. I was sitting here just nodding my head because like him, I'm former Air Force. I was assigned to the intelligence community to provide telecommunications. And I told your screener, I said, now we're going to all see firsthand how we treat an enlisted person versus how we treat Biden and Hillary, who are also in possession of top secret material when they weren't supposed to. So get some popcorn ready and watch the show.
Thanks for the call, Chris. Clay and Wheeling.
Morning, Dan. Morning, Amy. You know, some people are mad at the leaker. Some people are mad about the information. I'm mad at the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. Who in their minds thought that was acceptable to do, to change the narrative completely? I want names, and I want those people found and hung for treason because they have lied to the American people. I could have accepted we're not commenting on this, but they have changed the narrative 100%. To it being propaganda, not intel. Treason. These people are treasonous.
Thanks for the call, Clay. Well, you know, and there's some nuance here, too. I mean, Tucker's take on it, for example, some people's take has been that the disclosure in those classified documents that we have troops in Ukraine, say that's it's a hot war. We're directly engaged. We have American soldiers fighting Russian soldiers. Maybe not. That's not clear, at least to me. And again, we talked to Jed Babin about this yesterday, former Deputy Undersecretary of Defense, and he wasn't surprised by that either, because in many of these instances where we have material interests and we're providing weaponry, we're also providing special forces to train soldiers that are going to then do the fighting. So it's not clear that Americans are actually doing the fighting rather than the training of Ukrainians to fight. So I don't, I'm not ready to subscribe to that yet. But something else to Clay's point about lying, I mean, here's how inveterate they are. Something that Tucker pointed out last night that is worth noting. What they were initially going to do in terms of covering these leaked documents, who they were initially going to blame, and the press just ate it up.
By the way, just last week, the plan was to lie in an even more grotesque way and blame Russia for this. And we're quoting, Russia or pro-Russian elements are likely behind the leak of several classified U.S. military documents posted on social media that offer a partial month-old snapshot of the war in Ukraine, three U.S. officials told Reuters on Friday. Really? Who are these officials who lied to Reuters? And then Reuters just, of course, obediently reprinted their lies, as they always do. News agencies print what they are told to print by the intel agencies, no matter how ridiculous it is, no matter how much dignity and self-respect they exchange in return for doing it.
Just blame Russia. You know, this has all of the classic earmarks of a Russian disinformation campaign. Gee, where have I heard that before, Hunter Biden laptop? Right. So anonymously slip it to Reuters. Just put this on the Russians until we figure it out. Greg and Schomburg.
Morning, Dan and Amy. I've got two quick points. First of all, to follow up on a Chris call, which was excellent. It's been my experience that when people say they have systems in place, but you can't track a great outflow of data, they have no systems in place. And the point that I want to bring up that's new to this discussion is the inability of our educational systems to probably generate the people that have the insight within these bureaucracies that we should have these systems in place. Meaning that any system in any government or big entity is always going to be light years behind a small, nimble company, and government is probably the best case in that. But I want to go to a second point that is new within this discussion and I think more consequential. Dan, as you raised in a Catholic school, you know that when we were taught about moral implications about our actions, there were two levels, the explicit things that we did and the things that we did that were explicit, but they had consequences to other people that were indirect. This guy has put so many people's lives in danger. And that whole element of the moral consequence of our actions is absolutely minus within the educational system of our country, and that has enormous consequences.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Greg. I mean, I mentioned that, and Babin mentioned that yesterday, too, and I don't want to diminish that because it's important. Just because you have something that gives lie to what powerful people are saying, doesn't mean you have license to break the law. Doesn't mean that going about it the way that he went about it, posting this information on a site for gamers. Come on. That is not being considerate of others, and that's not being sophisticated enough to know that there are intel gatherers in harm's way in foreign lands. They're Americans, they're patriots, and there needs to be some consideration for them as well. So I'm certainly not saying he doesn't deserve to be prosecuted. What I think I'm saying is he's not the only one. Something else I want to get to quickly, and then we'll go back to calls, because there's yet another angle to this. And that is, again, like our discussion with the Where's the chaos? There was no chaos withdrawal in Afghanistan. You know, John Kirby's view on that. What do our allies see here? What do our allies see with this administration? And what does that mean in terms of the steadfastness of our alliance with them as opposed to the wooing that's being done by America's mortal enemies, like the Chinese communists? Here's Victor Davis Hanson.
The problem isn't that they haven't been surveilling the web. We know from Twitter the FBI was hiring people basically for $3 million a year. They're surveilling the wrong people. They're surveilling American citizens that pose no threat, and they're ignoring the people on the web that do. I think the bottom line is that we're terrifying our allies, because when you look what Macron's doing with the Chinese, or as you mentioned, South Korea doesn't want to get involved with the sanctions, or we look at Saudi Arabia's flipped with this non-aggression pact, and then India's buying oil, and we see Egypt, Shell. These were all solid allies. But when they look at this Pentagon and the FBI by association, and they see the balloon fiasco and how they lied about it and said that they didn't surveil very many sites when we know they did, they look at the Afghanistan debacle, the greatest humiliation, I think, in American history, and they lied about it and said it was a success and not very many people were left. And now they see this, and they're revealed, and then the President of the United States said, well, it doesn't look like there's that much in there. I think they're distancing themselves. They said, you know what? At least for now, the United States is too dangerous an ally, and it's not reliable, and more importantly, it's incompetent. And we're going to either stay neutral or take a look at this new coalition that's forming against it. And it's terrifying. These people are incompetent, but they're incompetently dangerous. And that's what's scary. They're putting all of their resources and other agendas that have nothing to do with the efficacy of the Pentagon or the quality of intelligence. And they should all be let go for all of these serial disasters.
Jordan in Antioch.
Yeah, he nailed it. And hopefully our electorate is viewing it the same way our allies are, supposedly, right? The scary part about this is you got used car salesmen like Lindsey Graham who put boots on the ground based on this intelligence report, right? That we're winning, it should be no problem. He would eagerly send guys in there into a meat grinder. I listened to several different podcasts, and it's guys that have been over their training, civilians, you know, and they've said, now this is them coming back, so this is not fact, but these guys see it. They're training conscript forces to work with Ukrainian forces and to hold what Ukrainian forces are leaving behind because Ukrainian forces are coming back getting whooped. And you're not hearing that on the news. You're hearing it from people that are going there and coming back. I hope that the Republicans are keeping a box score on this, because forget the economy, forget the border, forget abortion. If you cannot put somebody in office and decimate this administration just based on the sheer fact that they have absolutely weakened our country, we are in danger, and they're doing it through their incompetence, then I don't know what we do. I don't think we stand a chance if we can't win. If you can't just put this out there and force them out and get the electorate to vote these people out, I don't know what kind of chance we stand after 2024.
Thanks for the call, Jordan. Frank, Arlington Heights.
Yeah, I think this can all be summed up relatively briefly. We as a people are completely unserious people in everything we do, from the way we run our elections, our foreign policy, everything about our society is completely unserious, and that is what our allies are seeing, and they're acting accordingly is what they're doing. We're a joke. That's what we are.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, continuing our conversation about alleged classified document leaker Jack Teixeira, the Air National Guardsman from Massachusetts, taken into federal custody yesterday. Specifically focusing on the D.C. press corps. This was the part of the exchange prior to Teixeira's arrest between members of the press corps and Brigadier General Pat Ryder, who's the Pentagon's press secretary.
We continue to review a variety of factors as it relates to safeguarding classified materials. This includes examining and updating distribution lists, assessing how and where intelligence products are shared, and a variety of other steps. I would say, though, that it is important to understand that we do have stringent guidelines in place for safeguarding classified and sensitive information. This was a deliberate criminal act, a violation of those guidelines. And so, again, I think that's important to understand.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's in response to being pressed. Hey, what are you going to do to make sure classified information doesn't wind up, well, in the hands of
gamers?
Well, yeah, in the hands of gamers like Jack Teixeira, but also in the hands of the press corps. How are you going to make sure, you know, we can cover for you and not be exposed when you're exposed? By the way, do you get the sense that Pat Ryder and the people at the Pentagon are the same people running Bud Light? The same people who didn't know
about things that they are doing.
Yeah, didn't know that Dylan Mulvaney had been retained as a spokeshuman. Yeah, anyway, I digress. Glenn Greenwald on Tucker last night, talking specifically about the press here and the important takeaway from their response to this classified doc leak.
The government was lying about this incredibly important war with a nuclear-armed power that we have actual troops deployed on the ground in Ukraine. There's going to be no diplomatic resolution through at least 2023, that Zelensky is planning on using our weapons to strike deep into Russia, which we were told would never happen, risking escalation. He did the job of what journalists claim to do, which is show the public the truth. If you work for the intelligence agencies, you would be furious at this person. You would hate him because he revealed that you just lied. He exposed the truth about what you were doing. What's amazing is the New York Times, the Washington Post, all the people who were at that Pentagon briefing today think the way the CIA and the Pentagon think. They hate this person. It was the New York Times and the Washington Post that did the FBI's work and found the leaker and led the FBI to him. They're demanding that he be punished. They're demanding that the government clamp down and keep things more and more secret. What kind of journalist would ever do that, would want to see a leaker exposed and punished and then demand that the government keep even more secret? But that is what these media corporations are there to do. They love leaks when the CIA and Homeland Security tell them to leak. That's when they disseminate propaganda to the public, like they did during the Trump years when they leaked the transcript between Michael Flynn and Ambassador Kislyak, the most serious kind of leaking crime. The Washington Post did that. Nobody looked for that leaker. Nobody cared. Everybody cheered because it served the interests of the security state. But when it comes to transparency that undermines the agenda of these agencies and that proves to the American people what the truth is, it's amazing that these journalists are on the side of the government and will actually hunt down the leaker and demand that he be punished even more.
Mm-hmm. And the results of these leaks, one, it may put American intel personnel at risk, and that's a serious thing. And again, not to be discounted at all, and which is why that young man should be prosecuted. But as I said, he's not the only one. But it also impacts public policy and what we're going to do and what we're going to finance, because among the other things contained in the documents that were leaked, South Korean officials expressing reticence about sending ammo to Washington that would be sent to Kyiv because South Korea has a policy against arming foreign nations at war. Also, America, the documents suggest America could push Israel to sell weapons to a third party that would arm Ukrainian forces, allowing Israel to maintain its appearance of advocating for peace by using a cutout. Well, Israel is going to be a lot less inclined to do that now. And so who picks up the freight for the need to continue arming Ukraine? And frankly, what does that even produce, given the intelligence estimate that suggests Ukraine is not winning the war, which is what we've been told for most of the past 14 months. For more on all of this, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Brett Baer, host of Fox News' special report, and number one best-selling author, which is 5 p.m. Chicago time, as everybody knows, and number one best-selling author of To Rescue the Republic, Ulysses S. Grant, The Fragile Union, and the Crisis of 1876. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning.
What about the press corps' performance here?
Yeah, I think it was fairly expected. You know, they go down this track, and the questions don't really vary from that. I think it's fair to point out that the substance of the leaks was not really covered as much as the leak itself. And, you know, I think there are a number of lawmakers saying, you know, why can the New York Times and the Washington Post find this leaker before authorities, number one. Number two, why do they do that and not find the Supreme Court leaker or the, you know, other leakers of documents if it goes the other way ideologically? So I think those are all fair points. That said, having covered the Pentagon for 6.5 years, classification and keeping things secret is a big deal, and it does eventually risk people's lives in the field, and I've seen it firsthand, so that side of it is important.
Well, why do you think he did it? And he's been doing it for 6 to 8 months with this, you know, secret chat group of gamers.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like he was leaking it to the media. Right. It wasn't like he was a whistleblower or some altruistic, you know. You know, Edward Snowden had a purpose. He purposely did it to expose the surveillance program. This is more like showing your buddies what's going on and how cool it is that you have access to this info. At least right now, that's what it looks like, right. Because it was pretty relegated to that that chat room.
But here's the thing. Half the country is going to say Edward Snowden does say Edward Snowden's a hero, and half says he isn't. And, you know, don't hold me to the numbers, but you get what I'm saying. Very divided opinion on Edward Snowden. And very divided opinion on this kid in the wake of everything that's transpired in the last 24 hours. And what's the takeaway from the intelligence agencies? What's the takeaway from the federal government? Is that really what you want? People that engage in sort of vigilante justice, either in, you know, accidentally in this case, perhaps, or purposefully like Edward Snowden, because you are lying to the American people. The predicate for all this is you are lying to the American people. You're not being straight. And so you're losing half the country in terms of faith in these institutions. Don't you understand how dangerous that is?
Yeah, of course. Of course. But, you know, let's not be put our head in the sand here. Governments do things that they don't tell the American public. And, you know, having to come forward with the special forces in the Ukraine embassy is not exactly something that they wanted to do.
No.
One, because you have U.S. forces on the ground. Two, because it puts those people in jeopardy. They are now threats, and they are at threat. And, you know, the Russians have a different take after that. So you don't want to put that out there. Maybe they have a purpose that they are training Ukrainian forces on the front lines. Maybe they have a purpose that they're protecting the embassy staff. Whatever it is, it becomes very complicated if that's out there. So, governments do that. And is it great? No, but it is a fact of life.
No, I agree with that. And the special forces thing, that doesn't bother me. And I'm not on the camp to think, oh, well, we have American soldiers fighting Russian soldiers. We don't know that. And there's no indication that that's the case. So I'm not saying that. And I'm not saying that should be disclosed. But I am saying you're telling the American public something that is, according to these intelligence documents, 180 degrees from true regarding how the war is going. And it's a predicate to spend our money on that fight and those people as opposed to the American people. And whether you think that's a good policy or not, that should be debated honestly. And it can't be if you have a media and a security state, to borrow from Glenn Greenwald, colluding to to run a disinformation campaign on the American people.
Yeah, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that there is too much buddy-buddy in how the intelligence community operates with certain members of the media. And you're right, when they want to leak something, it is something like, you know, there's no problem with leaking. And I mean, think about all of the transcripts of Trump with world leaders. I mean, that stuff is the ultimate of leaking. What world leader wants to get on the phone with a president who eventually is going to end up in the Washington Post and be, you know, frank with that person? So I agree with you. I think that it's a complicated thing, and it is something that, you know, what's in those pages, if all of that is true, and again, you have to make sure that what you're getting is not already adjusted by some evil force, like the Russians getting it and putting it out and altering it. Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out what's true, and that's hard, and that's what journalists are supposed to do. Sometimes that doesn't happen in Washington.
Well, did you on Fox? Yeah. I mean, this kid's a low-ranking National Guardsman, but I was watching CNN because I always want to see what they're up to, and they're calling him a white supremacist, you know, a racist. Where did they get that information for, and did Fox report on any of that, allegedly?
No, I mean, we went by the interviews that the Washington Post and the New York Times did with these kids in the chat room.
Kids.
Someone somewhere did a put that tag on that kid because there were some memes or something that were shared in the chat room that had racist tones to them. That's, I think, where somebody put the tag on it. But listen, we were covering the substance of what was happening, and we'll find out more about the motives and who this kid is over time, I think.
Before we let you go, another topic, just with a new entrant into the Republican race for the presidential nomination, a serious one, and Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina, and, of course, everything that's transpired over the last couple of weeks. What's your handle on the Republican race for the nomination right now? Trump and DeSantis, obviously, but then the question of whether there's a third lane. Where do you see the landscape?
I mean, right now it's all Trump. It really is. I mean, every poll that we look at is not 10 points. It's 20 or 30 points. And there's going to be a bumpy road probably at some point. I mean, these legal things, whether you believe any of them or not, are going to add up, and there will be some part of the population that says, I'm tired of the chaos and we need to win, et cetera, et cetera. And so there will be a lane for an alternative. I just don't know, you know, how many lanes. There's probably only one. And so the fewer candidates there are, the more likely there is that there's one possibility as far as an alternative. But I do think, you know, Tim Scott obviously brings to the table a number of things that are, you know, really attractive. He's got a great story, and, you know, he's going to be an interesting candidate. Nikki Haley has had some success raising money and bouncing around the country. If I had to guess, I wouldn't say that some of them choose to get in. Maybe Mike Pompeo doesn't get in. Maybe others don't get in, considering what they're looking at.
He is Brett Baer, host of Fox News Special Report, 5 p.m. to Chicago time. Number one bestselling author of To Rescue the Republic, Ulysses S. Grant, The Fragile Union, and The Crisis of 1876. Brett, thank you as always. Appreciate it.
We'll see you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer. Don't miss Dan Proft going head-to-head with Juan Williams on Tuesday, April 25th at Beyond the Talking Points. Get your tickets today at 560theanswer.com/beyond.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We brought you this coverage of the Adam Toledo, Eric Stillman matter at the beginning of yesterday's show, but we're going to do so again now because we're going to be joined by Chicago FOP President John Cantanzara to discuss it. This is Leah Hope reporting for ABC 7 News. She sat down with the Toledo family to get mom and aunt and sister's reaction to the push by interim Chicago Police Superintendent Eric Carter to have Eric Stillman fired. Eric Stillman, again, the police officer who gave chase to Adam Toledo, and when he turned with a gun, shot and killed Adam Toledo. chasing him after he had been sport shooting at vehicles in Little Village. Here is the coverage, and I put that in quotation marks, by Leah Hope and ABC 7.
That's just one more step to getting justice for my son. He didn't deserve that.
Hope came to us because now we see that someone's listening to what we're going through.
A little bit of a relief, it brought us a little bit of hope, because it's like a sign towards like justice for Adam.
And a little bit more from Mom.
We're all humans, but we have to be responsible of our actions. Sometimes it's just too much. But I have to speak for my son. I'm his voice now. He's not here to defend himself.
And then as a reporter, I would have just said, well, are you holding yourself accountable for your actions? He was 13 years old. He was out with a 22-year-old gangbanger at 3 in the morning.
And does a 13-year-old who's shooting at other people, is he responsible for his actions? So that's one problem.
Everyone always forgets how conflicts start. Everybody. It's just easy to forget.
One problem is the lack of those follow-ups. Here's another problem with the coverage. This is Leah Hope's characterization of what happened that night.
In March 2021, 13-year-old Toledo is seen on Chicago police camera video running away, then dropping what appears to be a weapon and raising his hands. Then, Officer Eric Stillman shoots the teenager in his chest.
And that is just a complete misrepresentation of what we can clearly see on the video. She makes it sound like it was sequential. It was a shot spotter, police officer gives chase, he turns around, raises his hands, then police officer shoots him. And that is a gross misrepresentation of what happened.
And he didn't stop. I mean, the 22-year-old gangbanger, he stopped when police said stop, and Adam kept running with a weapon.
So the question is, what is FOP going to do about it, and what are Chicago residents going to do about it? Because that kind of agitprop makes Chicago less safe. It makes some Chicago residents more clueless. And it's not good. The only people it's good for are the lawbreakers. So I said yesterday, there is no reason that Chicago police rank and file, you can't control the brass, but rank and file, should never talk to ABC 7. For any reason, and neither should Chicago residents. Stand in solidarity with Eric Stillman, who acted, as we talked with Raphael Manguel from the Manhattan Institute the other day, who acted heroically. He acted just as heroically as the officer who was shot and killed responding to a domestic. But since he wasn't shot and killed, now he's a bad guy who should be terminated. That if you want to even have a chance at police doing policing, you better stand with Eric Stillman. For more on this, FOP President John Cantanzara joins us. John, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Jen and Amy.
So what about FOP's response to that report?
Not surprising is all I can say. Everybody chases the sensational story for ratings. To hell with the truth or reality. Or the damage it does to the officer that they are willing to throw under the bus and run him over a few times.
Doesn't this make it more dangerous for police officers who are out there today by pushing this false narrative?
Well, I mean, we've been dealing with it for some time now, and this is just the latest incident where the false narrative keeps getting pushed forward. It makes the citizens less safe because, as Dan said, if this goes through and this kangaroo court called the police board ends up firing Eric Stillman and we have to fight in the court system from there, that is just going to demoralize an already demoralized workforce, and that will transition to a less safe Chicago.
There's the famous image of New York City police officers turning their back on Bill de Blasio. Why shouldn't Chicago police officers turn their back on ABC news cameras, on ABC reporters, and encourage residents of Chicago to do the same? There has to be consequences visited, not legal, but cultural consequences voluntarily offered a response from police and from residents, don't you think?
Well, I don't necessarily have an issue with that, but for me, myself, I think that doesn't do my members very good credit if I am going to blacklist certain news agencies in this city, because it's better to show them for the hypocrites they are with the opportunities you have rather than just let them have the bully pulpit and say whatever they want to say.
Well, I hear you, but I mean, this could be a moment that really is clarifying. I mean, this isn't going to last forever.
Well, what's that going to change? You think that's going to stop them from reporting silliness?
No, but it's not going to last forever. But it would spark a debate, and it would spark more focus on this sort of reporting, and it would spark more people rallying around Chicago police. I suspect that would happen because. A lot of people in the city know they're being lied to. A lot of people have the same reaction to that reporting that I had and that you have. And they need to feel like there's, you know, a real response, an institutional response to a press corps that, you know, serves the movement Marxists that have taken control of the city.
I understand that, but my thought has always been, the best way to shut up a bully is to get in their face and prove them wrong. You know, that's just kind of how I approach this all, is I don't think just ignoring somebody, especially with that kind of power and ability, does anybody any good as far as my members are concerned. And I would rather sit down and have a conversation and explain to Leah Hope why she's wrong, why the whole family is wrong, and why it's shameful. I get why the mother is hurt. She lost her son to the street.
Absolutely.
To the streets, not to CPD or Eric Stillman. She lost her kid to the streets. I can almost give her a pass on the heartbreak and emotional issue she's going with. Shame on the family, shame on the niece, the aunt, and any other politician who is literally looking at a dollar figure, and that's why they keep prodding her and prodding her and prodding her to keep this story alive instead of just dealing with her grief and trying to move on with her life.
Well, so Kim Fox passed on this to press criminal charges against him. David Brown wanted a 5-day suspension. What's happening now, and what is Eric Carter's role in all of this?
So the ball was started long ago, and trust me, everybody knows I'm no Eric Carter fan, but the reality is this wasn't Eric Carter. The policy and the procedure is very simple. When there is a disagreement between COPA and the superintendent, they have to put a position paper together, and the police board randomly assigns one person to review the superintendent's position and decide if he met the burden of proof. That one person is the Kangaroo Court's president, Gion Foreman, who is as biased as can possibly be, and he determined that the superintendent did not meet the burden. At that point, the department is obligated to go along with COPA's recommendation. And it's just a mere formality of crossing T's and dotting I's on the paperwork. And that's all Eric Carter did, because David Brown, the ghost payroller, was too big of a coward before he walked out the door to do it himself.
So this is a done deal other than appealing it to a circuit court?
Well, it's a done deal as far as now the process will play out, and it will go through the police board.
Okay.
And for a full hearing, and then once the police board renders a decision, you know, we do have the ability to challenge police board decisions, the same as the city does for that matter.
Right.
If the police board was doing the right thing, they can challenge it. But, you know, I will tell you this, we've been fighting the police board whole dynamic because in our collective bargaining rights, it currently says by agreement, we allow police board cases or determination cases to be heard at the police board. We no longer agree with that, but until we have a successor collective bargaining agreement, we can't get these cases to an arbitrator where we know they'll be much more fair and basically adjudicated properly. There's a reason why the city has fought us in negotiations about this. They cannot stop it from happening. Once we decide we no longer agree with that provision in the contract, it will go away, and they know that. So they have been fighting it. We could have had arbitration for these cases for 2 years now. But they know that the police board is slanted. It's a kangaroo court, and it's going to hang the officers 9 times out of 10, and it's exactly what they want, which is why they haven't capitulated to getting rid of that agreement.
Well, isn't the police board head that you just mentioned, wasn't he involved in a row with an officer where he was allegedly assaulted and that officer has been disciplined?
Yes, and you can go be that one of the members of the, I mean, it's all kind of the same branches of one tree. the spokesperson for COPPA, his father, is on the police board, Reverend Mike Leedy. I mean, his son is the spokesman for COPPA. I mean, it's a joke. So you don't think there's inside information being passed back and forth? Like I said, it's been a kangaroo court for years now, and we have not gotten a fair shake in so long. It's disgraceful. And Dion Foreman's passed his 10-year limit as far as even being on the board of the board of the police board.
How's Officer Stillman doing?
You know, Eric's clearly, you know, in a very bad place. This just doesn't go away. And again, he did everything textbook perfect, and he's still fighting first for his freedom, now for his job. And it's just ungodly that somebody who gave service to this country in the military and now to the people of this city is being subjected to this yet again. But I could tell you, this department and this membership is going to show up and show out for Eric Stillman like they have never for a police board case. I can guarantee you. They want a they want a circus, they're going to get a circus, because I'm beyond aggravated. I know the frustration of my membership with this nonsense. I would hope that incoming Mayor Johnson does the right thing and allows this to be deferred to an arbitrator instead of the police board.
Hey, you mentioned that if Brandon Johnson gets elected, 1,000-plus cops are just going to resign. What's going on with that? Because he has he's mayor-elect right now.
I mean, I can tell you his transition team doesn't bode well for the police department and the men and women working on it. So I think there's just a kind of hold your breath at this point and see what are the policies. Is it more rhetoric and campaign promises that were put out there, or are they actually going to transition into policies and procedures? That's the fear that I think our members have. So until we see who, number one, the three recommendations for superintendent are, and who he ends up picking from them, that's going to be a big decision for a lot of these officers. And then what policies kind of trickle down from there.
Has he solicited input from FOP for the superintendent search?
Oh, yeah, and we're throwing a retirement party for Lightfoot, too.
I just have to ask.
Dan, there was such an Amy question.
I know. You have to ask because it's an opportunity. I mean, I understand who Brandon Johnson is, and I have a pretty good understanding of what he's going to do and not do. But it doesn't mean there's not opportunities for him to go against script and surprise people and maybe calm some people down. And that could be one of them. I'm not saying he's going to choose it. I'm not expecting him to. I'm just saying, you know, he could.
I agree. And again, that's where I was talking about the bluster of campaigning as opposed to actual policy, and we'll see where it goes. But absolutely. I mean, I don't have to like Brandon. He doesn't have to like me. But the reality is the same dynamic it was with Lightfoot the day I walked in the door. You are obligated to work with us. I'm the leader of this union. He's the leader of this city. There is no way getting around that, no different than it was with her. She chose a different path because she didn't like to be criticized for her failures during the 2020 riots. Well, sorry, but if Brandon Johnson does the same ineffective things, I'm certainly going to be calling him out too, and it's going to have nothing to do with this campaign. It's going to be how he governs, and he's got a clean slate, but that's going to be up to him.
All right. Well, and enjoy that Lori Lightfoot retirement party you're throwing.
Yeah, where can we invite us?
Fair.
Maybe you can bring the Columbus statues.
Yeah, right at Compound Central.
John Canzara, President of Chicago FOP. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Have a good day. Thanks.
Thanks. You too. Always a pleasure. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
If you're talking about it, Dan and Amy are talking about it. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Fifth column actions by intel agencies within Western governments, Western-style governments, not limited to America. We've talked and continue to talk quite a bit about the intelligence community's efforts to undermine the previous president of the United States, and not to mention its collaboration with the media to undermine individual freedoms in this country. But this report, based on a U.S. intelligence leak, here we go again, Israel's Mossad intel agency was encouraging protests against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Oh. This report suggested that Mossad was instigating people to protest against Bibi's proposed judicial reforms, including several explicit calls to action that decry the Israel government, according to U.S. Signals Intelligence. Now, this claim that was made and the reporting on it was dismissed by both Mossad and Netanyahu as not factual. But those judicial reforms that were proposed did create a lot of political consternation, and ultimately, because of that, were scrapped by Bibi. So I wonder, this against the backdrop of the intel documents that were allegedly leaked by that Massachusetts Air Guardsman, which included a suggestion that America was talking to Israel about buying weapons through a third party that could be sent to D.C. and sent on to Ukraine so that Israel could maintain its effective neutrality with respect to that war while aiding and abetting the Ukrainians. For more on this and other matters, pleased to be joined by Dr. Daniel Esheim, Deputy Consul General at the Consulate General of Israel to the Midwest. Dr. Esheim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Good morning, Dan. Happy to be on the show.
Happy to have you. So let's start with the report from U.S. Intel, Signals Intelligence, that Mossad was working to undermine the judicial reforms that Prime Minister Netanyahu proposed, and of course the administration's dismissal of those claims as untrue.
Yeah, so as you mentioned correctly, these are false analysis probably made by someone, I don't know exactly, still investigating in America where it came from and who is the reports are from, but definitely this is false accusations. It was published both by the Prime Minister's office and by other sources. There's nothing into this piece of information.
But with respect to the proposed judicial reforms themselves that did bring people out into the streets, and for Americans, describe, and to the Chicago area listeners, describe the nature of the proposed judicial reforms. What was the point of contention, and why Bibi ultimately scrapped them?
So what we are seeing now in Israel is a very interesting process of democracy at its best. We see a new government that was recently elected that are proposing reforms for the judicial branch and other parts of Israeli systems, saying that this is the best way to bring democracy back to the way it should have been. So the claim is of the current government that the Supreme Court took responsibilities upon itself that were never granted by the legislator throughout the years, and that they are chosen by also politicians, but also themselves. So other judges also vote for other judges, and therefore the proposed reform, and as they claim, they want to make more democracy into the system, bring it closer to the American system. On the other hand, the opposition is claiming that these reforms are going to politicize the judicial system and therefore undermine some of the democratic values of Israel. And this brought hundreds of thousands of Israelis to protest on the streets, and which shows how strong Israeli democracy is, because this is turning really public opinion is, and the heated debate at times, this brought to the table both sides to sit and seek for a compromise, which is going to come with consensus, the large consensus. They're sitting in the president's office with serious teams from both sides with a goodwill to resolve this issue that has been really shaping, and for the last 3 months, the way Israel is handling the situation.
How much of the divide in Israel over these judicial reforms is across religious lines? Essentially, the more religious Jews on one side and the more secular Jews on the other.
I think I wouldn't say that this is what clarifies what makes the two sides in this discussion. I think it's a discussion between those who are more conservative and claim what is the role of the Supreme Court in decision making regarding laws that were passed in the legislature, whether they have the authority to overrule them, or the other side that wants to be more activist. So to have them the capacity and authority to overrule laws on the other hand. And I think this is in between Israeli society. We see a shift here, not anymore the traditional right and left or the religious and secular. We see a combination of people for it that you would not expect and people against it that you would not expect. So I don't think it has anything to do specifically with the religious factions, even though, of course, there are support because the coalition parties are formed from the ultra-Orthodox groups as well. They are supporting it, but every group supports it from their various other reasons. Sometimes it's their interest for their group. Sometimes the way they see the other group sees liberal democracy as something that is sometimes they're feeling that they're discriminated by the liberal democracy to their way of life. So everyone has their own thoughts, but I don't think it's a clear line that is one because the ones who are leading it are not necessarily coming from the ultra-Orthodox groups.
The other matter I mentioned, classified documents that were allegedly leaked by this Air National Guardsman that indicate, among other things, that the U.S. had been in talks with Israel to purchase weapons to a third party, to get those weapons to the Ukrainians and use a third party cutout so that Israel's fingerprints weren't on the supplying of weapons to Ukraine. Is there truth to that?
So again, the leaked documents, it's always a combination of false information and half information, a quarter information. About this thing, of course, I don't have more information about it, and whatever the official response is the response that I have. But I do want to say about that Israel, you mentioned in the beginning, Israel's stance regarding Ukraine is neutral. Israel did not have a neutral stance regarding Ukraine. This one has to emphasize. From the beginning, Israel said that we all agree that the unity of Ukraine is number one priority. The aggressor here was one side, it was clear, and that is our responsibility as Israel is also to help on a humanitarian basis. Israel was the only country, the first country, to send a full operational field hospital into Ukraine. We accepted Ukrainian refugees, and Israel is supporting in many, many ways. We sent thousands of civilians and part of the Israeli government agencies to support their humanitarian efforts. So Israel's stance is being clear here.
Yeah, that was a poor choice of words by me. But what I meant, yeah, I didn't mean that you were neutral in terms of Russia, Ukraine. I meant that you had Israel had not been one of the countries committed to providing military support to Ukraine.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I meant. And is that's still the position as far as you understand it?
This is currently the position Israel is reviewing all the time throughout what the needs are. We get requests from various sides. We analyze it. We talk to our partners. We understand the situation. We have constant contact. We have our minister, Eli Cohen, Minister of Foreign Affairs, visited Kiev, met the President Zelensky a couple of months ago. They've discussed various things, and whenever there will be something, it will be done publicly. And Israel is proud of its relationship with Ukraine, and therefore, at this stage, we are talking still about defense mechanisms and humanitarian support. If something will be different in the future, we will notify.
I wanted to move over to Iran, and what are your thoughts on President Biden's Iranian policy?
So, good morning, Amy. So this is, for us, it's very important. After the visit of President Biden in Jerusalem, for us, it was very important to hear that he promised that Iran will never, ever acquire nuclear weapons. And we trust when the U.S. president says such a thing, and now is the time for the world to act. Iran is the closest that has ever been to acquiring nuclear weapons, and it's the Western world's responsibility, and Israel, of course. For us, one needs to understand that for the rest of the world, it might be a strategic issue. For Israel, it's an existential issue. And for us, Iran is a country that openly says that they want to wipe us off the map, but they don't only wait to do that. They actually work on a daily level with proxies all around the Middle East. So they acquire them with weapons that shoot at Israeli civilians, rockets to terrorists in Lebanon, in Syria, in the Gaza Strip, and they are providing terrorism tools for terrorists. They are providing funds to undermine the stability of the whole Middle East. So So not only with Israel, but with other more moderate Sunni countries. And we have to be very clear about this. The moral world needs to tell Iran this game is over. And they need to understand that they will lose a lot from trying to acquire nuclear weapons and proceed at this stage. So we work together very closely with the U.S. administration, the previous one, with the current one, in order to make sure that this will never, ever happen. And with this, some things are done confidentially, some things are done publicly, some things are done diplomatically, and some things are done in other methods to ensure that the world will not have a nuclear Iran.
How concerned are you about Chinese Communist Party influence in the Middle East, alignment, if you will, between the Chinese and the Russians, which brings in the Iranians? There are overtures made in recent weeks to the Saudis to chill, warm up the relationship between the Saudis and the Iranians for larger geopolitical goals, perhaps in advance of ultimately Chinese Communist Party interests. Is that a real threat for Middle East stability, for Israeli stability, as far as you're concerned? And if it is America responding as strongly as she needs to, in your estimation?
So I'll start by saying that the Saudi-Iran connection is worrying. It's not something that it's not a positive step. We see Saudi Arabia in the moderate countries that are helping stability, and Iran, as I mentioned before, is destabilizing the region. And we would hope that not to see those things that we did before. Nevertheless, the Chinese involvement, we're very close working with China on many economic projects and other things. We are aware of the issues that were recently done. And of course, as I mentioned before, we are not satisfied to see them happening. Nevertheless, China remains a close ally as well of Israel. Never replace, of course, the United States, which is number one, will remain number one ally of Israel, politically, strategically, morally, value, and every other thing. So for us, of course, the American involvement in the Middle East is what we would like to see. The more, the better. So historically, currently, and in the future, and with the other parties who try and get into the area, of course, we need to evaluate each one and see what is going on case by case. And we welcome any involvement to promote peace. So if there's a country that wants to help us promote peace with the other Arab neighbors, we'll be happy. But of course, there's no replacement for the United States in the Middle East and in the world in general.
He is Dr. Daniel Asheim, Deputy Consul General at the Consulate General of Israel to the Midwest. Dr. Asheim, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. All the best. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer.
Open mic Friday. Call in now. Open mic Friday.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, that time of the week, Open Mic Friday, taking your calls with comments, compliments, concerns, critiques, general crack pottery. We'll take it all, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Before we go to the phone lines, I did want to hear about that Wyoming sorority girl with the erection.
Yeah, okay, this lawsuit is fascinating. So six former and current Kappa Kappa Gammas, which, full disclosure, I am a Kappa. My sister is. My grandma's a Kappa. Remember when he joined the sorority? And now they're suing against it to get him out. Right now he doesn't live in the house, but he's supposed to live in the house this fall. And when he comes to the house, quote, this is according to the lawsuit, he doesn't live in the house, but he often will sit on the couch on the second floor common area, not studying, but watching women, the lawsuit alleges. Quote, one sorority member walked down the hall to take a shower wearing only a towel. She felt an unsettling presence, turned and saw Mr. Smith watching her silently. Smith, 21 years old, 6'2", 260 pounds.
Big girl.
No other Kappa Kappa Gamma has comparable size or strength. Thank you. And they know from his Tinder account that he's sexually interested in women. And they said that while he was sitting there, watching members entering the sorority, he had an erection visible through his leggings.
They're called meggings.
And other times he had a pillow on his lap.
I guess they are called leggings since he identifies as a girl. We actually have some audio of him showing up to the Kappa House at University of Wyoming.
Hi, I'm Vera Tobilo, and thanks for tuning in. You know, before I learned how to exercise properly, I was a poor excuse for a woman. Just look at those unsightly lumps of lard protruding from my sternum. I was so weak and frail back then, I couldn't even tear a telephone book in half. But I made that change, and you can too. So let's get busy burning off those bothersome bazooms. Girls, are you ready? All righty.
Yeah, so I think he just was excited to maybe do some Pilates with the ladies.
So they're seeking from the court to void his membership to the sorority and make sure that he does not move in because he's a dude. And according to our bylaws that were written in 1871, you know?
Oh, boy, the history.
Ready? Yeah. Any lady may become a candidate for membership who shall be of good moral character and above average talent. But the point was that it's ladies. This is a sisterhood for women. It was a mission to unite women.
Well,
but I'm so glad seven people.
Everybody at the house just have a Bud Light and chill out. I did want to read this from a couple of our friends in Addison, Angelo Sellis and Nando Neary. At the end of the month, Addison will be swearing in 6 out of the 7 people who won the 4th of April, the election on the 4th of April. Thank you. All 3 of our library candidates won. Now our library will have a conservative board. First act of business will be to reinstate the Pledge of Allegiance. Imagine that. 2 out of the 3 candidates who supported for District 4 won their races, village races. Without the list you tweeted out and the plug you gave us on the radio, they wouldn't have made it. If they are true to their words, we'll have majority there. Also, only time will tell. We did have a member also win in District 88, school district, who is in the minority, unfortunately, but they had somebody win. Elections are not our world. We had no idea what we were doing. Needless to say, we were shocked at our results. This was only possible because of the knowledge you and your guests provide on the radio daily and discovering Jeannie Ives and the folks at Breakthrough Ideas as well. And just showing you, I mean, first of all, thank you for the thank you. You guys did the work there in Addison, but shows you, you know, these guys are not professional politicos, but they got together a bunch of people and they spoke some truth and advocated some common sense things. And a lot of them won in Addison there in eastern DuPage County.
Good job. And so, I want to toot your horn because you were on Tucker Carlson last night.
I was.
You're just fantastic.
Thank you so much.
One thing that is important, and you talk about this on your program a lot, it was a racially based election, but you know who really put Brandon Johnson over the top? Was leftist, rich, white women.
Of course. That's the axis right there, Dan Proft.
Yeah, works on Happy Private Equity Wives. Yeah, met them.
Yeah, Unhappy Private Equity Wives is another good one. I still like Awful's the best, angry white leftist females. Oh, by the way, there was an Awful in the news. She's running for Senate to replace DiFi if DiFi agrees to leave at some point.
Who's that?
Katie Porter is, she's also 6'2", 260, like that Wyoming sorority girl. Mike Scott had the story earlier on the news, too. I saw it. That's a great one, that she's accused of having physically abused her husband before he was able to escape with his life, including pouring hot potatoes on his head that scalded his scalp. So, look, you're on notice, gentlemen, and I include P hats as technically men, not gentlemen.
Well, she should be disqualified from running.
You want to marry an awful? Then just prepare to have your scalp scalded with hot potatoes. That's how it goes. All right?
Okay.
Get to some calls. Dan, Southwest Side.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to give a shout out to Jed Babbitt. I appreciate him mentioning my band. We were a Gregorian chant cover band for Big Black and the Dead Kennedys, and we were called the Deadbeats of NATO.
It is a great band name, actually. Thanks for the call, Dan. The Deadbeats of NATO. That was a phrase coined by Jed Babbitt yesterday on the show. Very good. Eduardo, Midway.
Yeah, Dan and Amy, good morning.
Morning.
Well, I got a little bit of good news so far. I'll be having a open house Sunday at Archer and Melvina here by Midway. So Phil from Blue Island and his friends are definitely invited. So that way they can vote for the next mayor election.
Okay. You're going to allow them to register at your house? Is that it?
No, I'm kind of hoping they'll buy the house. So that way.
Oh, I see. I see.
A permanent Chicago residence. Yeah, I'm gone. I'm heading south.
Oh, really? Where are you going?
Where are you going?
I won't say right now, but it's somewhere in Florida.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah,
very
my nice. Plan. All I'll right, need to quit my job because they have a mileage cap.
Yeah. All right, Eduardo.
Something else over there.
All right.
So best of luck, I hope.
All right, yeah, Godspeed.
But come back and visit. Come back for the boat cruise and all that kind of stuff.
Definitely. I'll be
and for our Freedom Summit, you know.
Thanks for the call, definitely, Eduardo. Definitely. Stay in touch.
I've got his whole social schedule planned.
You can move to Florida and still stay in touch, I've heard.
Yeah, and you can come and visit because it's really hot and humid there in Florida, in case you don't know, during the summertime. That's why you should spend your summers here, where it's also hot and humid.
Exactly.
And you have a better chance of getting shot or robbed or carjacked. Such fun. Summer of joy. Summer of love.
Not much of a Chamber of Commerce picture. Oh, by the way, we should. I do want to mention something from our interview with Canton Zara, the FOP president, last hour. So we do want to correct the record. We try to do that here if we say something that's inaccurate. So we're putting on Eric Carter, the interim superintendent, the recommendation for Officer Eric Stillman to be fired over the shooting death of Adam Toledo. And that's not accurate.
Right. But that's what all the mainstream media shows said, too.
And well, unlike them, we correct the record. So it wasn't his call. It was the police board's call once they rejected David Brown's recommendation for a 5-day suspension. So, and as Ken Zara said, even though he's not a fan of Eric Carter, you can't put this one at his doorstep. So we stand corrected, and we don't put it at his
doorstep. And also, people should know that Eric Carter could have fought Eric Stillman's salary, so, you know, still getting paid while the investigation continues. He absolutely did not. He's like, no, he should still be getting paid.
Okay.
So that's positive, and I'll point that out till, you know, the sun sets, but that's a good thing for Eric Carter.
Even, you know, again, there's no need to overstate the case against your often political enemies, because they usually provide enough fodder just by stating the case as it is. Ryan in New Lenox, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan and Amy, thanks for taking my call. I have another suggestion for the DNC next year. I'm thinking at McCormick Place, they can do like an interactive museum display wherein you can see, since the time Joe Biden got elected, here are the, I don't know, what, 120 people who are awaiting trial on another felony who go on to attempt to kill or shoot, or actually kill or shoot someone. And just have it be like a fun little, you know, you lift the flap, you like rotate the thing like at a children's museum, and you see the carnage. Oh, look, this was just an attempted shooting. Oh, isn't that fun? Okay, let's move to the next gangbanger. What did he do? Oh, he shot 3 people at a Walgreens. Oh, my gosh, it's so fun. And the slogan can just be, it's working.
Mm-mm. All right, thanks for the call, Ryan. Little wall of fame at McCormick Place. Do they still have those beds up for COVID patients?
Oh, my God. How much money, millions did they spend, and they only served 22 people? And those were people that were homeless at might have had COVID because they had to look like they were doing something. Yeah, put them at McCormick Place for a few days. Get the media out there, and then we'll shut it down.
Kevin, Austin, Texas.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. A couple of things. First thing is I suggest you guys should have a segment called Awful News, and then you could have like a sound clip of Joy Behar or somebody like that, and just do it on some awful that was in the news.
Okay.
Second thing is, I'm just an idea, and then I'm curious, if there was to be opposition against Brandon Johnson, who would that be, and what would you nickname him?
Would there be what?
If there was to be opposition
against Brandon Johnson,
like political opposition, like on the city council, or are we talking about 2027 already?
Lopez.
Oh.
Brandon Riley.
Some kind of, like the Verdoliak 29, right?
Well,
who would it be, and what would you nickname him?
Actually, I think thanks for the call, Kevin. I think there is a group, and I think they have a nickname. At least that's what Ray Lopez told us. Him, Spezzato, Napolitano, Gardner, the Common Sense Caucus.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that works for me. We'll take text to an email. So I got an email from Wes in Naperville. on the leaker situation? If the leaker turns trans, the president will pardon him, a.k.a. Chelsea Manning. Now, that's a good point. Something Jack Teixeira might want to consider. Alleged leaker still, but yes. Okay. Sean, Northwest Side.
Hey, 2 points. I think for the DNC, the VIPs can pay extra to see Lori Lightfoot's giant schlong.
Yeah.
And then secondly, we've already sent, what, $500 billion when the media told us the Ukrainians were winning. How much are they going to want to send when the liberals find out that the Ukrainians are losing? They're going to empty your pockets. Give them everything. Let's go. We can't lose this.
Thanks for the call, Sean. I think we're at like $130 billion, but, I mean, who's quibbling? A few hundred billion dollars between friends here. But, no, I mean, that's the question. That was the discussion we had with Brett Baer about the lack of candor about the situation in Ukraine. And candor is required if you want to enlist the support of the American people. That maybe you can, you'll get a majority support for more military aid and more support within Congress and Congress vis-a-vis the people they represent. But when you lie, it doesn't inspire much confidence and it shouldn't inspire any support. Matt Southside.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. I just wanted to say that maybe after Lori Lightfoot leaves office, she can join that sorority and show those young ladies what a real erection looks like.
Oh, my goodness. They better win this lawsuit. I'm serious. I lived in my sorority for 3 years. I would not have wanted that.
No, I want the guy who sued Lori Lightfoot to win his lawsuit, or at least get to the discovery phase so we can see the evidence that or hear the evidence that she said, I got the biggest unit in town.
Oh, that would be priceless.
Lori, I think Triple Threat would be very popular in Wyoming, too. Ralph, Wilmette.
Yeah, just on the Lori, earlier in the week you talked about the peaceful protest where the fellow was thoughtful enough to bring along his rifle. And just because he pointed it at somebody who happened to be armed, he got himself killed. That was a victory for the people who put everyone up to the protest. The people whose idea it was to have that, they were toasting each other, high-fiving each other at the end of the day, because it was a great victory for them. Isn't that sick?
It is sick. Thanks for the call. Talking about that Perry case out of Austin, Texas, right? Bob Naperville.
Yeah, Amy, I just picked up on the word you referenced when this guy down in the Kappa Kappa Gamma house, you called it membership. I just think you might want to use another phrase than membership. Dan, be nice to Amy next week.
All right. Thanks for the call.
These are very sensitive times.
Yeah.
Right. I'm grieving.
While you're dealing with the trauma.
Thank goodness my Kappa Kappa grandma's not here. She'd have a heart attack.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at least,
Morning, girls.
Yeah, hi. How's everybody doing? At least he puts a lap
pillow. I see somebody's excited to start the day.
He puts a pillow over it.
Well,
I'm like, and just sits there and he's not studying.
Oh,
it's
sure
so gross. Yeah, watching girls prance around in a towel. It's just because he said he's a female.
Karen Beecher.
Good morning, my dears. I wanted to let you know that today I am celebrating my one-year anniversary of drawing my own line in my own sand. And today, 1 year ago, April 14th, was Holy Thursday. And that's really significant to me because I realized I was being my own Judas, not standing up and representing my own core values. After almost 20 years of appeasing and acquiescing to all the stupid and useless PD curriculums and the changes, the certificate requirements, other stupid mass requirements, and my continuous fight against their Sarahs while they continually violated my HIPAA rights, I finally drew my own line in my own sand when my principal led our staff meeting with the trans inclusion and pronouns BS. Mm-hmm. And I let out a huge gasp and they all stopped the meeting and they looked at me, and I looked at four teachers who had students in the school, and they all put their head down. And when I spoke to them privately, they said, oh, this would never happen to my child. And I said, hey, if they get to lie to you about this, and if you have to lie to other parents about this, that's the doorway. This is all a lie. And I want to thank you, Dan, especially because your righteous indignation really is a fire in my belly. So happy anniversary to me, and thank you both so much.
Aww. Thanks for the call, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Tell them not to send their kids to the University of Wyoming.
Oh, boy.
At least not Rush Kappa.
Hey, we're taking care of the problem, all right?
All right. We'll
see. We need some time.
Chuck and Delavan.
Chuck.
Hey, thanks for mentioning my band, Amy. Prance around in a towel. when I was dating, I was always dating a girl from I Felt the Thigh. Let me get on with some business here. I don't have any lisp anymore. I got my teeth fixed. Don't spray dandelions. Public service announcement, don't spray dandelions. That's the first thing bees will eat when it comes up this year, so don't put the weed killer out. And the place to be Sunday is at the tap room from 4:30 to 7:30, 4:30 to 7:30 with the D-Light Duel. And I'll be out on the dance floor, and being it's so warm out, I will have my my saddle shoes on. So that'll be something to see.
That sounds like it. Yeah, thanks for the call. Dude with an erection pretending to be a girl in a sorority house, Chuck at the taproom in his saddle shoes. And death is not an option. Which do you choose?
I'll go with the saddle shoes.
All right. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.